All right. Hey, Chris, can you hear me? How about now? Can you hear me? Hello, 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 hello. Yeah, you say something. Can you talk? You talk, talk,
Okay.
talk.
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Yeah, and I can hear you too.
Motherfucker. You
I
were
can hear
fucking
you
with me?
fine. Yeah, of course.
Damn it.
Did I look sincere? Was it like Emmy award winning? I mean, were you convinced that I couldn't hear you?
Well, I'm not really paying attention to you.
What's that?
Exactly.
Yeah. So there you go.
All
Good
right,
evening.
welcome everybody. Hi, this is another installment of Fuel Stop Chats. I'm James Matt Trishano,
I'm
along
Chris.
Chris Black, the ever popular writer. What are you drinking?
It's a red mug.
Very nice. It's a big red mug.
It is a big red mug.
Hey,
That red
so
solo cup.
I have a question
I
for
have
you.
my mug.
I posted yesterday on our Instagram, and for everybody listening, our Instagram is at Fuel Stop Chats. Fuel Stop Chats, all one word,
Say that three
plural.
times real fast.
No, I can barely say it once real time, in real time. So I saw yesterday, I had posted my first bike, which was a 1971 Z50, and I can give a story on that. But you had posted a bike. I didn't read the caption, but it looked like it was at a Yamaha 95.
80. It was an old DT80, my first
Nice.
motorcycle.
That was your first bike. Now, when did you get that?
I was 10, so that would have been 1972, and
1972.
I know Pop bought it used, so it's probably like a 70, 1970 Yamaha DT80. And gosh dang, I love that little bike. The funny thing is, my brothers and I had that bike. I had a 125 Suzuki after that. I had a YZ250 after that. I had a Yamaha 650 after that. And we still had that little DT80 around. And my brother and I got to talking about it. Now we're probably, let's see, 18 and 15 at the time, 19 maybe. And we were talking about this old Yamaha and about how reliable it was. And so my brother said, we ought to get that thing running again and take a ride on it because it would run like a striped ape. I mean, that thing was a beast. So we got to talking about it. My brother got the wild idea we'd get it running again. But my dad was like, that carburetor is going to be just stoved up from all the gas and it's just going to be gummed up. And my brother makes him a bet. He says, I bet you put some gas in that thing and it starts in two kicks. And my dad's like, yeah, that's never going to happen. Well, it got started, but the throttle was locked wide open. So I got to watch my brother, who now is 15, 16 years old, wild bronc ride and wrestle this DT80 to the ground. He says he won, but I'm telling you right now, if you'd have been in my dad's and my, from our perspective, that little bike just mopped the floor with him. I mean, it was hilarious. But yeah, that was the first bike. And even at 10, 11, 12 years old, as we rode up through that, and then I think I was probably 15, and I got an RM125 Suzuki.
Ooh.
And the plan was I was going to license that, was going to be my first vehicle.
An
And
RM.
yeah, the Enduro version of the Suzuki 125. I think it was an RM they
No, the
called it.
RM was the two-stroke racer.
Me make sure here real quick. I gotta, it's so, that sucks when you get that old. You can't remember
Well, you
that
said you got your
CRS
first bike in
disease.
1922, so.
Yeah. Well, it's what do they call that? CRS disease? Can't
So
remember.
when you were developing motorcycles with Harley Davidson, the very first prototype.
Oh, I was with Harley. Davidson hadn't joined yet.
Okay.
We're talking like 99, 1900 time frame when we were talking about, and the first carburetor, the tomato soup can, I'm telling you, it's money. It worked like a champ. You're right. It wasn't an RM. It was, what was the
Was it a DT?
DT was Yamaha.
Okay,
DR.
DR, yeah.
I think it was a DR. I don't remember. Gosh, dang it. That's terrible. I can't remember that. It didn't last long because I did get a YZ250. I know exactly what that bike is because that might be, I don't know. I don't want to know if it, I think it was my favorite bike so far in my life at that time. Because when I was 15, 16, I was 16 when I got, I only had the RM120 or the, whatever that Suzuki 125 was. I only had that for about a year and a half. And I came across a good deal on a, it was unfortunate. Guy had an accident. He didn't want to ride the thing anymore. So I bought this YZ250. It was at a time in my life where right after my dad had passed away, my mom's remarried. I got this new stepdad. I'm 15 and bulletproof. Can't tell me anything, you know, head thicker than a block of wood. And I'd take off on that bike for an hour and it would change the world for me, you know, whether I was jumping, you know, big chat sure. dumps, dunes, you know, sand, going down through the TIFF cuts where they strip mine and they made just natural, beautiful motocross riding spots. But man, I tell you, I found a lot of freedom on that bike, and that ability to lose yourself in something and let yourself be absorbed and consumed by, you know, the environment, the sound, the wind, the whatever. It just, I'm telling you, it solidified the fact that, you know, I'm going to be a motorcyclist, and that's just kind of how it is. And that's just it's a massive part of my life. And even to this day, Tammy will say, you know, it's, you know, the Snickers commercial where it says, James, you know, you're feeling a little crabby. Why don't you have a Snickers bar, right? And
angry.
Angry, right? And the camera zooms away from one character, celebrity, whatever, to this net, you know. That's kind of how the bike is, you know?
Yep.
You leave like an angry person and you come back and it's whistling and everything's good and right with the world. So anyway, that's kind of what got me hooked, and that's kind of the progression up till I bought my first street bike, and that was a Yamaha 650. I was in the service at the time, and I was on leave in Missouri. I had to get from Missouri to Fort Gordon, Georgia.
You've already told us this story. You're losing your mind.
Yeah. I had to be there by midnight, hit the big bird. Yeah.
Yep. That bike. Episode one. So if you
episode one,
listen to episode one, because that story is worth it. Even if you skip over the first 15 minutes of the episode, just listen to Chris tell the story of why he needed to apologize and thank his father or his stepfather, but we just know him as dad.
Dad. Yeah.
We know him as
dad. And you met dad.
Yeah. So yeah, I posted the Z50. So I think it was 1974 or 1975. I was 6 years old. My buddy. Well,
you're just a young guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a story that goes with this. So my parents got divorced around the same time, and it was not a pretty divorce. My father did not like motorcycles.
Oh.
So my mother bought me a motorcycle just to piss off my dad. I truly believe that. Neither one will confess to that. Unfortunately, my mother has passed away this past year, but I think if I was to ask her, she would probably say, yeah, I did it because that son of a bitch, blah, blah, blah. But so Bill Murdoch had an RM125, and he had his own racetrack in his backyard because his dad had, you know, a field, he had a farm. So right. Bill had a honest to God racetrack. Now, every kid in the neighborhood would go to Bill's house and just hang on the fence and watch him run the track. We thought he was just the pro. He was the best guy out there. Nobody could touch Bill. Now, I don't know how good Bill actually did on the circuit, but in our eyes, he was a star. So Bill and his dad had this Z50, and it was sort of like their track bike. You know, they bring it into the pit, and that's how they got around in the pit, and they decided they wanted to get rid of it. My mom found out about it. She bought it for me, and yeah, there was a hook, line, and sinker right there. Just put it in me, stick the fork in me. I am done. I've been on a bike ever since. There's, you know, a few periods of time when I didn't own a motorcycle – when I was stationed in Germany with the army, I did not own a motorcycle. I didn't own a car. I owned a ration card to buy a lot of beer. And that's pretty much what I did for 2 years. Well, a
you
year.
You had to, don't forget your LPCs.
Yeah. Well, there's that too. But I mean, my 2 years in Germany, a year of it was at, well, about 8 months of it was deployed for Desert Storm. So the 14 months that I was in Germany was pretty well intoxicated, drinking at the Green Goose down in Nuremberg. So I got back to Bragg, and the first thing I did was bought a GSXR 600, 650, 600. You know, Fort Bragg, North Carolina, is being such a secured location, that first bike lasted 2 weeks before somebody stole it out of the barracks parking lot. So insurance covered it. I got a second one. I had it for, I don't know, maybe about a month. I put it in storage for the winter. I got it out of storage. I had dual kryptonite locks on this thing. This thing was bolted down to the ground. It lasted 12 hours. Somebody stole that one. I decided, well, I'm just going to wait until I leave Fort Bragg before I get another motorcycle, because the insurance is, they're going to pay for this. But they're, and actually that insurance company, I will go ahead and say it was State Farm. They dropped me as an insurer because I was too high risk, which I thought was ridiculous. You're doing your job. This is what I paid you for. I'm costing you money. Now you get rid of me. But
yeah, that's that happens a lot when you're younger too. And you know what? You buy all those locks and you bolt that thing down. That's just a challenge to those guys. And
it wasn't even a challenge. It wasn't even a challenge. I will say this. They did recover the second one. I was called by the insurance company. They read the police report. The guy that stole it, I guess, had cut the locks, put it in the back of a pickup truck, left out of there, and had gone to a chop shop. The cops raided the chop shop, and he hopped on the GSXR and took off. And I was sort of proud. I mean, he outran the cops. He beat them. And then he crashed. He went in the hospital. But the bike was, I mean, I believe it was rideable. It made it back to the shop, and, you know, the guys at the shop were telling me, yeah, we're checking it over. Doesn't look too bad. And I said, listen, that thing was just in a high-speed chase from the cops. It was a stolen bike. I don't think that, you know, are you sure that it's not totaled out? And he's like, well, let me go check it one more time. He sets the phone down, and I hear kink, kink in the background. He's like, yeah, sure as shit. There's a dent right there in the frame. We're going to total this bike out for you. I was like, all right, thank you. And that was that. So recouped the money and ended up getting stationed somewhere else and getting another bike, which was a 1400 Ninja and probably the fastest bike I've ever owned. That thing was insane. But yeah, that Z50, man, I love that bike. I'd ride that thing every day. I had, at one point, I had three motorcycles. I should have recognized the problem that was building inside of me as a motorcycle addict when you are 10 years old and you have three running motorcycles. I had the Z50, I had the Honda 65, which was the blue banana seat bike, and I had a Harley Davidson 90 that was built in Italy, and it was such a great bike. And then I blew the piston on it, and because this was such a off the wall bike that you couldn't find parts for it, I would have had to go on to a tool and die to actually have a piston made for it. And this is back in the early 80s. That was just that was way out of my price range. So we ended up getting rid of the bike, totaling it. I wish I had that bike back. I wish I had them all back. I think, you know, that's probably one thing that we all agree on as bike riders are, bike riders, is I wish I could have all my bikes back.
Yeah, that and our cars. I had my first car. It was a 1957 Chevy pickup I bought with hay hauling money. And gosh, man, I'd give anything to have that old truck back today. That was
coming home next week.
Yeah, you got the Camaro coming home tomorrow, the next week, right?
Yeah, it'll be next Friday. I can't wait. The 69 Supersport, finally done. It's been in there. I dropped it off last year, first week of February.
I remember.
And then we took off and did a ride out in, where did we ride last year? Texas. We did
Twisted Sisters again. And yeah. Went to that cool barbecue spot in Blanco where we get the banana pudding.
Man, the banana pudding. All right. So listeners, if you're ever in Blanco, however you want to call it, Texas, there can't be, but maybe two at most barbecue joints in that town. I would be surprised if there was two, because there isn't, but maybe one stoplight in that town. But right off of the main square, there is a small barbecue joint, and the name escapes me for right now. But if you walk in there and you ask them, do you have banana pudding? And if they say they don't carry it, then that is not the place. The place that you want to go to, they make a banana pudding every day, and it is gone every day. You have to get there probably before one, but hands down, best I've ever had. Chris and I went there with a group 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
It's old 300.
Old 300, thank you. So old 300 barbecue, definitely worth the trip, the stop. Great place. And then it's a good launching place right there too, to go do some hill country riding.
Yeah.
Some of those farm to market roads were just outstanding out there.
Yeah, it was. It was awesome. It was funny because I was telling somebody, I didn't know there was this thing about banana pudding aficionados, but this guy that I ran into is one. And he was debating with me about whether it was real banana pudding or it was as good as his banana pudding or it was. And I'm like, dude, I don't know. I just know that I've had a lot of banana pudding with the vanilla wafers in it, you know, like all my life, my mom would make it.
Yeah.
And it was better than that. And it was, I tell you how good it was. You know what a nut I am for ice cream. I would order the banana pudding over getting a scoop of ice cream.
I remember your facial expression when you tasted it for the first time. We sat down and Chris will deviate a route to go to a Dairy Queen or a Ben and Jerry's or a mom and pop's ice cream shop. Chris is hooked on ice cream. We got that banana pudding. I just told him, I was like, you need to get one of these. You need to get one. So he went inside, he got one, he sat down and he just looked at me and he ate it. And I think I took 10 years off of his life with that. He went back to about 40 years old in his face. Some hair grew on his head.
Yeah. Yeah. You told me I was making facial expressions only Tammy might know. It was good. I don't know, but old 300, you know, the other place that I really, really, I will always remember is that Rock Springs Hotel.
The hotel.
The historic Rock Springs Hotel. Both times we stayed there were phenomenal, but I'll never forget the first time we ran into this place. We were coming south to north in a just a toad choker of a rainstorm. That's when Rosenblatt, remember, he was pulling over at the crossing at the CBP checkpoint. And he was just begging us to sit long enough for him to put some clothes on because he was soaking wet. He was freezing. He was miserable. And as always, ill-prepared. But that's a different story. We'll talk about him maybe a whole 30-minute episode. But
we would invite him on, but we'd never get a word in edgewise.
No. And yeah. So anyway, we get to the hotel. It's pouring down rain. We get to the porch and there's a break in the rain. Remember that? Everybody scrambles to get to their bike and get their gear off the bike while it's not. In fact, I was standing on the street throwing luggage to guys off their bikes while they were on the porch just so we could make it faster. You went in and asked the guy if there was a place we could get some pizza, if there's a pizza delivery place. And he said, there's a place you can get pizza, but they don't deliver.
Yeah.
And I never forget. He said, he goes, they're open though, if you want to go pick some up. And it started pouring down rain again. And he started laughing. He goes, you got a car? And of course he just watched us ride up in motorcycles. We're like, of course not.
Yeah. I got one in my pocket.
Yeah. We took a bunch of cash up and this guy gets in his personal truck. He drives to the pizza place, brings back the pizza while we're upstairs getting dry clothes on, cleaning up. Come downstairs. His wife's got the table set with plates, got buckets of ice, got some soda. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh no, I remember.
And then the next day I come down in the morning, she had coffee. Mm-hmm. She said coffee will be ready around 4:30 or 5 in the morning. And I went downstairs to get some coffee. And it was an honor system kind of door too. You walk out front, You know, you have a cigar, you walk back in, you lock the door behind you kind of thing. And I walked out on the front porch to have some coffee, came back through the door. Now I'm facing the counter now. I didn't notice it on the walk out, but on the way back in, there's a stack of towels and a white piece of paper taped on the front that said "For the Motorcycle Guys." Yeah, and she had a whole stack of towels for us to dry our bikes off the next morning. That's one. It's, if you're going to ride the Twisted Sisters and you need a great place to stay, the historic Rock Springs Hotel, man, you got to do it.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, great little rooms, awesome price. The staff just
off the charts, man.
Off the charts. I mean, you had to share a bathroom on, I think some of the rooms was a shared bathroom down the hall. Not all the rooms have bathrooms. You definitely have to call ahead. There's not a lot of rooms in this place, but oh man, just the customer service was above and beyond anything that I've ever had at
hotel. We've stayed at some nice joints, you know, in our careers, whether it's a JW Marriott or it's a Wynn or a W, or I mean, pick a hotel. These people and the kindness that they showed us rivaled anything I've seen anywhere. So I would tell anybody and everybody, if you're in that area, you want a great place to stay with three blocks, the morning handmade breakfast burritos.
At the gas station.
Dude, those ladies are pumping out some killer breakfast burritos in the morning.
Yes.
Great place to stay.
Like way too many. We'd gone in there hungry and I was like, yeah, I'll take a chorizo. I'll take a sausage. I'll take a bacon. Yeah. And she just like, see,
just keeps pumping them out, man. And they're phenomenal. They're fantastic. It reminded me of being in San Antonio, you know, when you get those great breakfast burritos in the morning at certain spots, that place is off the charts. Never would have, you know, you don't expect that when you're East Coaster, you know, gas station, you don't buy food at a gas station. It's like we have a gas station here that makes the best fried chicken in town. It's crazy, but it's good.
Yeah.
So anyway, the TS125, that was the enduro that I had.
Okay.
And for everybody listening, when I asked James about, don't forget you had your LPCs to get around with. Those are leather personnel carriers. The Army issues two of those to you, two pair, carry you anywhere you want to go.
Yep.
And then let's see.
In other words, boots.
He's talking boots. They're boots. So yeah, the Yamaha, the Honda, the Harley. Well, and then the first GTL was 2014?
Yeah, 14.
6 years ago?
Yeah.
And in 4 years' time, I covered all but Alaska. Well, I covered the 48.
In Hawaii.
I can't wait till they get that bridge built to Hawaii, but I covered the lower 48 in 4 years on that bike and was just had a little moment, you know, getting rid of that bike. I'll be honest with you, man. We put a lot of miles on and then, I picked up this one and, I got it on, Tuesday. And I think on Friday I left we went through Kansas, through New Mexico, Texas, rode the Angeles Crest Highway, went up through, saw the General Sherman tree, largest single stem tree in the world. Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Went up to, ran up the Coast Highway all the way up to, Seattle and then, back across the top home. We did 4,000? What did I say? It was 7,145 in 10 riding days.
Yeah, because I think we were really close to each other. Because I was on a similar trip. I had ridden from Tampa to San Diego to do a conference out there, and I parked the bike at the San Diego BMW. They put some new tires on there for me. Did a once over on the bike, and I had flown back from the conference, and then I'd flown back out there a couple weeks afterwards and picked the bike up, and I ran up from San Diego all the way up to Sacramento, crossed over. My wife had flown out. Now, I love riding with my wife, but she hates the cross-country long travel. And I'm part of the Iron Butt Association. I like doing 600, 700, 800 miles in a day. That's just freedom to me. to my wife, that's hell. So
Tammy's the same way.
Yeah, I rode the bike out there. She flew out there. I met her in Reno. We stayed in Truckee. We did the whole Tahoe thing. But on my way up to Sacramento, I hit all the national parks on the way up. And we were just planning on hitting Yosemite. And I told her, I was like, Ro, extend your vacation. Let's change the flights around. Come out a little bit. You know, you're going to be going home a little bit later because you have to see these other places. So we went all the way back down to Sequoia and then worked our way back up again. And that's when I had the wheel bearings went out on the front, going over the mountain, barely made it into a shop, ended up getting a U-Haul to put the bike into, to bring it back up to Sacramento. They switched out the wheel bearings for me there. My wife rented a car and took off from there because she had a flight out of Reno to go to Idaho Falls. I got the wheel bearings done. She got to Idaho Falls, rented a car, and just started seeing Yellowstone because she had never seen in the Grand Tetons. So I met up with her in Yellowstone. We dropped her car off that she had rented. We rode the Yellowstone Grand Tetons, made it over Beartooth, over to the Black Hills. And then my sister lives in the Black Hills of South Dakota. My daughter flew out there. The three of us stayed there for like 3 days. And then I left them and I started my way back. And then they flew back from Rapid City back to Tampa. And I slowly made my way back. I think I had to go to St. Louis for work.
Yep.
So I picked up a couple work days, did a couple meetings, and then just, you know, meandered my way back. It was a great summer. That was like a 30-day trip right there, just because I had sort of worked some, you know, weaved a little bit of work in there. But 30 days in the summer on the bike, you just can't beat that.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, man. There's something about those cross-country trips, though. You can, you know, it's funny how they talk about losing time and time slowing down. I read a great piece one time. It talked about why that, as we get older, people say about the time flying by and I don't know where the time went. And this article said that when we become really familiar with our surroundings and we become really familiar with our patterns and have like a regular regimen and we're pretty predictable through our day, our brains aren't experiencing enough new things. And that's why it feels like the days are flying by. Where when I'm on a bike, I can spend 4 days riding out west and it feels like I've been gone for a month, you know, because you're seeing so many new things, new places. So I just figure I got to deal with myself that I'm going to make a really concerted effort to continue to fill my days with some new scenery all the time and new experiences and slow time down and smell the roses a little bit more.
Well, and talking about time, I think we're out of it.
We're out of time already. See,
guess what? Time flew by right there.
Yep. We're having fun.
Well, till next week, Chris, we'll see you.
All right, brother. Good catching up. Ryder out.